KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. What is the future of food? How can it sustain us? Vandana Shiva is an environmental and anti-globalization activist. Throughout her career, she's fought for changes in agriculture practices. She spoke at Town Hall on September 12, 2013.
The last time I was in this town hall was during the Seattle protests. And Ralph Nader and I were on this side debating the U.S. Commerce Secretary and Jagdish Bhagwati. Jagdish Bhagwati then later wrote a book in which he's got three paragraphs about me. And he says, I do this work because I want to raise a dowry. He should realize how old I am. Also, that I've always fought against the culture of dowry. What brought me to Seattle is an awareness that started in 1987 of how the corporations that had brought us chemical warfare, then transformed it to agrichemicals, which for me is the continuation of chemical warfare in our food system, and realized with the emergence of the tools of genetic engineering that now they had an opportunity to lay claim to owning life by pretending to be inventors. So we can say, when you have the GMO ballot, the labeling ballot, one of the big issues is GMOs actually means God move over. We created the seed, we own the seed, we have a right to rent collection from life, and we will get this into the international treaty, which is what they did. 1980s, they were already drafting the Agreement on Intellectual Property, which became WTO. And the reason it has such an awkward name, TRIPS, is because how we relate to biodiversity and other species is an ethical issue. It has nothing to do with commerce and trade. And my country had objected to intellectual property on seeds and had objected to intellectual property being brought into a trade treaty. So the Washington lawyers ran back and put TR before IP and said, now it's trade-related by definition. Monsanto is on record to say we drafted this agreement. We defined the problem. We were the patient, diagnostician, physician, all in one. And their sickness, their being a patient, was that life was prospering, seeds were free, and farmers were free to sow seed. That became Monsanto's sickness. So they worked from the 80s onward to make sure that A, most crops would be genetically modified, and linked to it would be patenting, and the patents would make it illegal for farmers to save and share seed. It's about the patenting. It's not about feeding the world. Just as much as the Green Revolution was not about feeding the world, it was about selling chemicals. But for so long, there's been an ability to spin. And we were, as communities across the world, made to feel agriculture was a backward vocation, primitive, must disappear. Backward people do agriculture. And the second was, food was insignificant. Even I was part of that thinking. I really thought food was insignificant. I thought quanta were much more important. I would spend nights and days solving equations, not eating, not sleeping. And I always say I'm so very grateful to corporations like Monsanto that they have taught me some of the basic lessons of life. I would not have bothered about the seed if they weren't genetically modifying it. I wouldn't have bothered about saving seed if they didn't want to grab every seed on this planet. Now, 87 meeting, which put me on this track, and where they talked about GATT, a treaty where they could impose these patents worldwide, that's how I got involved in GATT issues, which then led to the International Forum on Globalization and led to the mobilizations here in Seattle. What the corporations had said in 87 was, by the turn of the century, we'll be five companies controlling all seed, all food, all health. So it was supposed to happen 1 year after Seattle. But the mobilization here woke up so many people across the world. And one of the most powerful slogans of our times emerged from Seattle: our world is not for sale. The things of value to life cannot be reduced to a price, cannot be reduced to a commodity. And everything that makes life possible falls in that category. That's why it must stay in the commons, to be collectively looked after and protected with love. Seed, our rivers, our waters. And I love the symbol for the 522, the corn and the salmon together. It's your mobilization that has made people wake up to the fact that it's not just about plants. Their intention of genetic engineering is all life. All life. To create a world where nothing exists in freedom, nothing exists in self-organization, nothing exists for the larger purpose of maintenance of life, of Gaia, of this amazing creation. So the food system we got used to, and we assumed it was all right and could carry on into the future, shocked us when we everywhere realized how big the concentration of power was becoming. That five seed companies, the old chemical war companies, five companies were now taking control of the seed. Five companies anyway were controlling the trade, and they're the ones who wrote the agriculture agreement of WTO. Five companies were then involved in the processing, and five in the retailing of food. Where 300 million species have their right to food, because to live is to eat. And we have an ancient Upanishad which says, everything is food, everything is something else's food. Chief Seattle's wonderful statement about us being part of the web of life should stretch our imagination one step more, that not only are we the web of life, but the web of life is a food web. And therefore food is vital. The industrial system that really was a retooling of chemicals from warfare to agriculture started in this country first, was expanded to the world. The Green Revolution was just a name of selling that package to the third world with World Bank loans. It was first introduced in India. We saw what it did. I was compelled to look at agriculture in 84 because the state of Punjab, the most prosperous of agricultural states of India, which was chosen for the Green Revolution, had erupted in very violent extremism. 30,000 people were killed. 6/9/11s. Same year, in a city of Bhopal, 2nd December, 3,000 people died with a gas leak from a pesticide plant owned then by Union Carbide, now by Dow, one of the five that are players in the chemical and seed sector. My mind goes back to the images of those children whose bodies lay gassed. The funerals, can you imagine 3,000 dead? The funeral pyres were just mountains of bodies. I see the 200 bodies of children in Syria. And I think, why is there no concern for others who have died in chemical warfare through agriculture? Chemical war in our food systems is responsible for the largest share of ecological devastation of the planet. In some countries, 90% species have been lost because of industrial farming. The United Nations organized a conference in 1995 to take stock of plant species, plant variety disappearance, and their count in 95 was 75%. Because of industrial monocultures. 75 to 90% of the water has been destroyed because of industrial agriculture. There's a convention on desertification and land degradation. 75% of the soils of the planet are degraded because of industrial methods of farming. And 40% of the gases that are contributing to climate chaos and climate catastrophes, of the kind that have taken place in my region this monsoon season, where very, very intensive rain in 2 days, a burst of a glacial lake, and too much dam building, all contributed to a level of flooding I could not have imagined. You know, I've spent my life doing ecological work. And part of what we do is imagine the impact of destruction. I could not have imagined the destruction we saw. I started my ecological activism 40 years with this wonderful movement, CHIPCO, Hug the Trees. Women came out and said, these forests protect us. Don't cut them. 10 years, we fought. Eventually, 1981, we got a logging ban in our state. Recognize that forests must be protected. And then with the viral of greed that globalization unleashed, anyone who could be illegal, corrupt, grabber, managed to become leaders of the economy. That's the case globally, and that's the case locally.
Vandana Shiva, an environmental activist and the author of Making Peace with the Earth. She spoke at Town Hall on September 12, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of her talk by going to kuow.org/speakersforum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Vandana Shiva in a moment, 920, 94.9 KUOW. Economically, Washington State is generally doing all right. Unemployment's around the national average of about 7%, even falling below that during the month of August. But it can be easy, when we're talking about numbers, to forget that there's a person behind each statistic. While Washington State's recovery is going fairly well, there is still uncertainty for many people. Brett Klub is a government employee and member of the Washington Federation of State Employees. For Brett, recovery doesn't feel like the right word yet. We'll hear about it tomorrow during the noon hour. Weather outlook for the Seattle area for tonight. Lows around 50, partly cloudy. For Friday, highs around 70, mostly cloudy. Friday night, lows in the 50s, rain at times. Saturday, highs down into the 60s, showers likely. and a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Support for KUOW comes from Nissan's 100% electric Leaf, the sponsor of National Plug-in Day, Saturday, September 28th. More information available on the Nissan Leaf Facebook page. Support for KUOW comes from the Strangers Genius Awards, providing cash grants to local artists every September in Seattle. More about the 2013 finalists in literature, art, performance, music, and film, and the awards show on September 28th at thestranger.com/genius.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Vandana Shiva is an environmental activist and anti-globalization advocate. She's the author of 20 books, and her latest is called Making Peace with the Earth. She spoke at Town Hall on September 12th in a talk called The Future of Food.
I remember way back at one of the forums that Gorbachev used to organize, the State of the World forums, he said, when I did perestroika, I had hoped to get democracy. Instead, we got the mafia. Because free market democracy is mafia rule and corporate rule. There's nothing like free market democracy. 20,000 people have died in my region this monsoon season. And Navdanya, whose main work is saving seeds and helping farmers go organic and helping them market their organic produce through fair trade, we are having to do things we've never done in our lives. We're having to build homes. We're having to lay cables because the bridges are all gone and the roads are all gone and kids are walking 24 miles, 30 miles a day to go to school, which is across the river, and there was a bridge, but now the bridge is gone. So that climate chaos, 40% comes from industrial agriculture. A large part from chemical fertilizers, which are 300 times more potent in emitting nitrogen oxide. Nitrogen oxide is 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide. All these animal prisons emit methane. That's why it stinks when you go past a factory farm. Big contributors. And then, of course, the chemical fertilizers requiring the energy to produce, all the machinery, all the fossil fuel demand. The big two stories that have been told about industrial agriculture, first, that it feeds us, and second, that it's efficient, both aren't true. ...72% of the food eaten today comes from small farms, not from industrial farms. The two crops that are genetically modified at the highest level, corn and soya, they only contribute between 5 to 10% to human food, and that too to unwilling consumers who would not touch it if they had a labeling. More than 90% of the corn and soya goes either to drive cars as biofuel, and that too because of the subsidies, not because it's efficient, and the rest goes as torture material for animals in prisons. Because if the animals could choose, if the animals could have a labeling battle, they would say, give me grass. The bovines would say, give me grass. And I remember 2 years ago when I was in, I was teaching at the University of Oregon. I had a chair in the law school. The organic farmers were, you know, coming, taking me to their farms, and there's the woman who started to cry. And she said, first they robbed us of the corn by genetically modifying it. Now they want us to rob us of alfalfa, which was the alternative we picked. So they make organic impossible, which is what they would like to see, a world without sustainability, a world without the ability to produce and reproduce in partnership with nature. So while there's a 75% destruction of the planet, this system only gives us between 25 to 28% of the food. So do a very simple calculation. If they were to move from 75% destruction to 100% destruction, they'd get to 33% if you could produce food without soil, without water, without biodiversity, which means they can't go beyond where they are in terms of the food supply. But they can go very far in terms of planetary destruction. That's the first reason why the industrial agriculture machine has to be stopped. And today, that machine only works on the basis of the promise of GMOs. Okay, Green Revolution was wrong, but now we'll get rid of chemicals. We'll have plants that won't need chemicals. That's all the advertisement is, you won't need to spray. Chemical use will come down. In fact, one of the Monsanto's favorite attacks is people like us come from the pesticide industry. And if I have to be on a TV show, I say, but you are the pesticide industry. So why would I come from you? You know, they always have a way to make it look like the people who are criticizing are supporting a worse alternative. The data on chemical use is very clear. In India, pesticide use went up 13-fold in the areas growing BT cotton, which was supposed to control pests. But the pest has become a super pest, and new pests have emerged. And now there's a lot of scientific work showing why it's inevitable that the pests will emerge. First, because the plant is made more fragile. How is the GMO created? By shooting a gene into the cell of the plant. That's not a healthy plant to begin with. And it will be more vulnerable to pest attacks. But also, now that you put a poison into the plant is not doing its own work for creating resilience. It's letting the toxin work, and the toxin is not able to work against all pests, so you get new pests. 13-fold more. Was it an exception? No. China has 12 times increased pesticide use for crops that were supposed to get rid of pesticide use. In this country, you have spread of superweeds, 70 million acres or hectares, but half of U.S. farms are overtaken with weeds that can't be controlled because of the spread of Roundup-resistant crops, which were supposed to control the weeds. They're now proposing crops resistant to Agent Orange, 2,4-D. It was bad enough that Agent Orange was sprayed on Vietnam. Do you want to have Agent Orange in your entire food chain?
No. No.
So the fact that there's going to be more food isn't true. In the case of GMO cotton in India, the data is so very clear. Actually, yields have come down after the BT cotton was introduced. They were higher before the BT cotton. The very good scientific study I've just been given, that the yields actually go up and down according to the rain. So the year 98, year 2000, the rains were good. And most cotton in India is grown under rain-fed conditions. And the yields went up to 1,200 kilogram a hectare. No BT cotton at that time. The rains have been bad. The yields have come down to 460 kilograms a hectare. Lower than the averages before. There's a very good study done by the Union of Concerned Scientists showing that there is no gain in yield. So when they'll come with advertisements at the time of I22 to say this is going to solve the problem of hunger, you've got to let everyone know that it is at the root of hunger. Because they're not producing food, they're producing commodities. Commodities don't feed people. Commodities can be speculated on. And after the subprime crisis in 2008, all of the investors jumped to food as a commodity because everyone would have to eat. If you lost a house, you went out and lived in a tent, became homeless. But no matter what, you will get food. Every level of investment is about 25% return. There is more growth in the speculation around food commodities than in the fields of farmers. And I've seen bank advertisements saying, "Don't you love rising prices?" Because they're thinking in terms of their investors. They don't think, not thinking of that poor woman who was eating one meal a day and will now eat a quarter meal a day. The second big myth is the issue of efficiency. When I was compelled to look at the Green Revolution in Punjab with the disaster of 1984, I realized two things. That, you know, productivity is output per unit input. That's the basic definition of productivity. So you should look at all the outputs and look at all the inputs. Do they look at the inputs? No. They don't look at the fact that they use 10 units of input to produce 1 unit of output. In resource terms, in energy terms, it's a negative system, industrial agriculture. They don't tell you that farmers are spending 10 times more in inputs than they're earning in that system. The big farmers make it because they walk away with your tax money and my tax money in India. It's not the system that is making big farmers rich. It's our tax money that's making big farmers rich and agribusiness rich. I know in the case of Europe, there is 80% of the subsidies go to about 10% of the landlords and they don't have agribusiness like you do. So for ecological reasons, we can't afford to allow the industrial system to continue. For economic reasons, we can't afford to let it continue. For health reasons, we can't afford it. 2 billion people are suffering because of eating the wrong food. 4.3 trillion is what the FAO has assessed this is causing in terms of damages. We haven't even started to count the damages due to cancer because of chemicals and toxics in our food. We can't afford to destroy our farmers because the entire edifice of industrial agriculture is destruction of work in agriculture. Chemicals destroy. Farm machinery displaces. And in the most extreme circumstances, the displacement is pushing people off the land. 15 million Indian farmers have been pushed off the land in the last 15 years of globalization. 2,000 every day. But when farmers become consumers rather than producers and buyers of chemicals and seeds, particularly patented GMO seeds, what you get is a debt trap. And the debt trap has pushed 284,694 more than 250,000 Indian farmers have committed suicide starting 1995. And if you do a mapping, most of these suicides are in the cotton belt. 95% cotton is owned by Monsanto and it's GMO. So when they tell you about this being a miracle solution for farmers, the advertisements say, bringing prosperity to farmers, improving agriculture, just have to go to areas of BT cotton to see what it has done. And that's why Navdanya works, to create seed banks so farmers don't have to commit suicide for their seed. We've started Fibers of Freedom, so the cotton is not toxic, it is organic. But let me quickly, in the last few minutes I have, talk about the emerging paradigm. The emerging paradigm is first and foremost giving back to the earth. (Clears) whether it is in building soil through organic, or it is in saving seeds, which is the conservation of biodiversity, giving back, or it is in conserving water, or it is in getting rid of the emissions, because organic takes out carbon dioxide emissions from the atmosphere. No matter what problem you look at, it is a healing of the earth. And when we heal the earth gives us more food. All our studies show that we increase food production through ecological agriculture. We increase food production through biodiversity intensification. Measuring the yield of commodities that are then speculated on in the Chicago exchange is not where hunger is addressed. Growing more diversity on our farms by saving seeds is where hunger is addressed. We have a report called Health Per Acre. It's available on our website. Do look at it, because we can feed two Indias if we intensify biodiversity.
Vandana Shiva, an environmental activist and the author of Making Peace with the Earth. She spoke at Town Hall on September 12th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of her talk by going to kuow.org/speakersforum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Vandana Shiva in a moment. 938 949 KUOW. Tomorrow evening on Radio Lab, it's ghost stories. People try to pin down and make peace with mysterious figures that haunt them, prod them, and fade out of existence. One man finds a way to put the beat down on his personal bogeyman. A dead monk spurs a king to build a perfect prayer machine. An unknown face launches 1,000 dummies. And a skeptic goes on a one-way journey to find out whether or not spirits exist. Radio Lab tomorrow evening at 7. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight. Lows around 50, partly cloudy. Friday highs around 70, mostly cloudy. Looking ahead to Friday night, lows in the 50s, rain at times. Saturday highs in the 60s, showers likely, and a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Vocalist Patti Austin made her debut at age 4 at the famed Apollo Theater. In her career, she's been a prolific session musician and prominent performer on commercials, which has earned her the moniker Queen of the Jingles. Her duet partners have included Michael Jackson, George Benson, and Luther Vandross. Austin joins Michael Feinstein to talk about their mutual admiration for Quincy Jones, Sammy Davis Jr., and the Gershwins a few minutes away. At 10 o'clock.
Support for KUOW comes from Washington Energy Services, featuring energy-efficient products since 1957 to fit individual home, lifestyle, and budget. Windows, heating, and cooling systems, water heaters, and more. Products, installation, and service info online at washingtonenergy.com.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Vandana Shiva is an environmental activist and anti-globalization advocate. She's the author of 20 books, and her latest is called Making Peace with the Earth. She spoke at Town Hall on September 12th in a talk called The Future of Food.
The big issues they're going to bring to you, and so much of the writings of the biotechnology lobbyists has been that golden rice can reclaim the image of biotechnology, from frankenfoods to saving babies in the third world. Now let me give you the background of golden rice. They started talking about it in the year 2000. The corporations have 80 patents on it. They're two scientists, one from Switzerland and one from Germany, who did the initial work. Now, creating golden rice is nothing big. You know, you shoot anything yellow into rice, it'll express yellow. But the point is, it's a very inadequate source of vitamin A, which is what they're trying to produce. We have such rich sources of vitamin A, I won't read the whole list, but amaranth leaves 1,166, coriander 1,300, curry leaves 1,300, drumstick, which is moringa, 1,200. And I remember as a child, we used to get a spoonful of cod liver oil every month. Wasn't very tasty, but it's 100,000 units compared to the 34 units they're going to put into the golden rice. They're fooling the world by not allowing us to see the available alternatives in a biodiversity-rich world and a world in which people know the value of biodiversity. People are food literate, nutrition literate, biodiversity literate. They also have another miracle called the GMO banana, and Mr. Gates is financing it. Just like the golden rice is 7,000% less efficient than alternatives, this too is 7,000% less efficient than alternatives. It will not give us the iron we need, but it will allow Gates and Dale is the scientist with 8 patents already on banana, to collect rents from banana. At the end of it, what we are witnessing today is the creation. You know, just like in this country when it was colonized, the common land of the First Nations was enclosed. And then landlords were created, people who own land. The assumption was the land is empty if it is not inhabited by whites. Terra nullius was the jurisprudence of that time. The jurisprudence of our times being created through GMOs, leading into patenting, is bio nullius. The earth is empty, life is empty, till we come as masters, put a toxic gene, then boom, life gets created. It's very good as a fiction. It's rotten as a food system. So we have to move from industrial agriculture and globalized food systems to ecological agriculture and localized food systems. In globalization, agriculture and food, controlled by corporations, not for giving nourishment, but for getting profits. It's based on chemicals. Seed, our commons, becomes intellectual property. It's about monocultures of a few commodities, not about food. Commodity speculation drives prices, leaving billions in hunger, and the result is a food dictatorship and the failure to feed the world. We have an alternative that works, and agriculture and food controlled by local communities who feel part of the earth community and nourish that earth community as a food system. It's based on biodiversity and principles of agroecology, the real science of food and agriculture, because genetic engineering has no science behind it, just a bad tool. Seed is a commons. Biodiversity is the basis of production. Food is about nourishment and about human rights. Prices are not fixed by speculators and exploitators, but through community injustice and fairness. The emerging model that is being practiced across the world can end hunger and malnutrition and has the capacity to bring good food to all. We have to create this food democracy. Your battle on 5-2 will be at the heart of the battle for food democracy, not just for the Washington state, but what you do will impact the rest of the world. All strength to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Vandana. That was extraordinary. And we thank you for not stopping at the one-minute mark and for never really stopping for the work you've been doing. You know, I always introduce David as one of the people who, when I first started doing this work, was such a source of inspiration for me. And you were one of those people as well, and for so many of us. So we thank you so much for just never saying no and never taking no for an answer. Thank you.
I'm not saying no to Frank. No.
Okay, so I had the very challenging job of moderating our Q&A session with Vandana, which is a treat for us to have. We have two mics, one at each end of the room, and I'm going to invite three people to come to each mic, if you would make your way. Ask you to frame a very a nice tight question so that we can get as many on the table as possible. What we're going to do is take three questions at a time. Vandana is going to share her insights on each of those in groups of three, and that's how we'll move forward with our Q&A session. So there's one mic here, and there's another mic right here. So would you like to begin?
Sure. I have a question about the I-522 campaign. So far, I've been volunteering with them a little bit, and the main message that they would like to put forward is that it is our right to know, and that the companies will spend money in order for us to not know. And these are the simple elevator conversations that you can have with somebody, very quickly, even if they're from a small town or maybe somewhere where they don't have quite the same foundation of knowledge of all of the nutrition and the debt cycles and such. Do you feel that that is a good approach for this? This is kind of what they found in focus groups. Is that a good way to approach this? I know you're not a campaign manager.
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do is for surely start to work in the communities that work on forests and in farming, because I have been told that one of the front groups the biotech industry has created is called Friends of Forests and Farms to vote no. Friends of Forests and Farms. So it'll be probably a few hunters, it might be the big farmers, whatever. There's a lot of work to be done. I was just very honored to receive from the at the dinner the resolution of the city of Seattle, which resolution 31484, supporting the I-522, and it's got three basic arguments. The first, the right to know, but also about the risk to public health, as well as the ecological risk. Now, one of the things industry will repeatedly say is a lot of work has been done to show there is no risk. The reality is some work has been done to show there is risk, but there's an international treaty of the United Nations on biosafety, which would not exist if there weren't risks. So you need to tell people, A, there's an international treaty. But in America, sometimes that works the negative, isn't it? People hate the UN, I'm told. Don't talk about it. But do talk about the 284,000. I think you must talk about the 284,000 farmers. You must talk about the death of the monarch butterfly. There are Cornell studies that show that pollen of GM corn kills the butterfly. And no, normal pollen doesn't. In addition, the herbicide spray is killing the milkweed on which the butterfly it feeds on the pollen. Talk about contamination and remind them about the losses the state suffered because the Oregon trials, where there was a contamination of the wheat. Yeah? So you might not have to give all the data on nutrition figures, but there are these five or six key issues that are absolutely confirmed. The statistics on cotton suicides is government data from India. You need to tell these stories, because without those stories, people will not understand. And it's not about a dumb vote, yes, and then they come with propaganda and you vote no, which is what happened in California. You know, people got confused. The reason you need to tell the stories is that people never get confused. And not only do they not get confused, that moment of the vote is not just a moment that will pass, but is one step in creating another food system.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. So we're going to invite you, if you would share your question. We're going to take another one right after you as well, please.
A couple of weeks ago, the New York Times did an extensive article about oranges in Florida and a disease that has destroyed, as far as I recall, pretty much all orange trees in Oregon, I mean in Florida are now, will soon be GMO. And so much of what I've heard about GMO so far has been about Roundup Ready and the poisons that go on to soy and corn. My question is there such a thing as a good GMO? Are there genetically modified crops that can be developed that would be positive, that would solve the problem like the diseased crops of oranges in Florida?
Thank you. The lady behind you?
Say again?
The lady behind you? Yes, we're going to take we're grouping the questions together. I'm sorry.
Okay. Dr. Leonard Horowitz wrote the book Emerging Viruses back in the 90s. I've met Dr. Leonard Horowitz, and being a Vietnam veteran, I asked him, I zoomed in on the fact that in his book Emerging Viruses, he said the only difference between Agent Orange and Roundup already is the 12.5 degree attachment of one particular molecule. Molecule for molecule, Agent Orange and Roundup are already the same formula. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, has anyone heard the vote no on 522? Because they do a very slick job of presenting the fact that the average person's income, their food costs will increase by $400 to $600 a year, and that these genetically modified foods are just fine for you. They've been engineered and tested in the lab and approved by the FDA, the Federal Death Administration.
There would be a good GMO if the knowledge base was reliable and the technology was accurate. As I mentioned, the knowledge base is unreliable because you assume that genes are fixed entities, isolated, and behave the same no matter what. And you move a gene and it's going to keep expressing in a predictable way. The reality is the genes are part of a complex. They behave differently according to the context. That is why we have a discipline called epigenetics. The technology is highly imprecise. You shoot a gene, you don't know where it lands, you add an antibiotic resistance marker, then you add a viral promoter. The reason so much is going wrong with the GM crops is because of the inaccuracy of that technology. Now, when they claim they're going to sort out the citrus problem, the citrus disease, two things. When I went at length about ecological agriculture, in ecological agriculture, you don't get pests, you don't get diseases. The system manages it all. You have diversity, you have pest-predator balance, you have healthy soils, you have healthy fungi. They control the disease. The reason there is these epidemics of disease is because you have total uniformity. It's only orange and all orange of the same variety. It's an invitation to disease. There are many, many ways to get rid of diseases in agriculture. Introduce diversity, both in the crops as well as in the varieties. The wonderful cider we had today from the company that's bringing cider. You know, they're creating these ciders from different apples. What says that diversity of oranges is a problem? Who voted for uniformity in oranges? They're using the crisis of the oranges in Florida as a way of introducing GE trees. But there are very many ways to solve it through ecological methods. On the issue of Roundup and Agent Orange being the same molecule, I have no idea. I'm sure the person you're citing knew what he was talking about. They use this argument that food will become costlier in California too, and that was the main issue. They used two arguments. One, food becomes costly, and they had these. It's very easy to get a fake person with a white lab coat to pretend, you know, pretend to be a doctor and say it's all been tested and it's safe. When we started to get mandatory labeling of nutrition facts, did the food price go up? No. Remind the people, labeling is not connected to food price, it's connected to the obligation of the companies that sell. Yeah.
Vandana Shiva, an environmental activist and the author of Making Peace with the Earth. She spoke at Town Hall on September 12, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of her talk by going to kuow.org/speakersforum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from Emirates, offering daily nonstop service from Seattle to Dubai and on to 10 destinations in India. More at emirates.com/USA. Fly Emirates. Hello tomorrow.
Hi, you're listening to KUOW, and I'm David Hyde. Our fall membership drive starts October 7th, and if you want to help us get the momentum going this year and inspire other listeners to pledge their support and have their donations matched, you can do that right now with a pledge of $1,000 or more. For details, email majorgifts@kuow.org or call 206-221-2732. That's 206-221-2732. And thanks so much for your support.
959 KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services. I'm Bill O'Grady. James McBride, musician, award-winning composer, and author of The Color of Water and The Good Lord Bird. Also Davey Rothbart, filmmaker, This American Life contributor, and editor and publisher of Found magazine. And Wild Ones, self-described funeral pop from Portland, all on stage in front of a live audience in Portland, Oregon. Live Wire Radio, tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. Weather for tonight, lows around 50, partly cloudy. Friday highs around 70, mostly cloudy skies. 94.9 KUOW Seattle.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.